Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
And the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. Michael, take it over.
Good morning, dear heart, and good morning, everyone. Hope all is well in your world. We're sitting here in beautiful, sunny, chilly, actually, Ashland, Oregon, looking out the window at this huge mountain sitting, well, I guess it's not a mountain, but a pretty big hill in front of us. It's a picture-perfect day, beautiful, clear blue sky with just some, I mean, absolutely picture-perfect clouds in the sky. It's beautiful. And, Gene, do we have any callers on the line with any questions, anything that you had left over from the chat room yesterday or anything in the chat room yet already today?
No, we don't have any questions yet. No one's talking yet in the chat room. We've got a few people in there, a few people on the phone. This is day 18 of Memorial Day.
So for those who are not sure exactly what that means, if you're new to our show, on Memorial Day, we had a discussion where we decided that the best way to honor those who have been killed, maimed, injured, whose families have been damaged by what they've been through and the insanity of war, for those who've been forced to kill, the best way to honor them is that we each pick an issue today that we're willing to open our breath to, that we're willing to use the tools to forgive. And by so doing, begin individually and collectively to remove the energy dynamic that causes war on the planet. And so we invite you to join us in that quest, and that today you choose to really celebrate that Memorial Day by remembering what it is that you're responsible for in your own life, letting go of the pretense that it has to do with somebody else, and choosing to forgive it. If you're new to the conversation and you don't know exactly what we mean by forgive it, we'll invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.com. And on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says download worksheets. The first link describes exactly how the worksheet process operates. The second link is the actual worksheet itself. I invite you to pick it up, put it to work. And suffice to say that forgiveness, as we're working with it, comes from the ancient Aramaic language. It's interesting, Karl Marx says, change the meaning of a word and you destroy a culture. Why? Because whatever word you change, you take away the whole history and the utility of whatever the word is that you change. So in the ancient Aramaic, we have this tool called forgiveness. If you're in some form of hostility or fear, if you're in pain, you apply forgiveness to your pain, your hostility, your fear, and you disappear it. Now, who do you suppose would want to change the meaning of that word and take that tool away and turn people into people who have no idea how to get rid of their hostility, their fear, or their pain, but live in blame of everybody else? And by living in blame of everybody else, are counseled to forgive. Well, just let them off the hook for what's happening inside of you, which, of course, means you're stuck with what's happening inside of you. We're here to share with you that there is absolutely no reason whatsoever to be stuck with what's inside of you. I don't care what you're feeling, what you're experiencing right now in your life. in your world, in your relationships, in your business with your neighbors, if it's unlike love, then it doesn't need to be there. And if you're the one who's feeling it, then you recognize, oh, okay, this is mine. I think I'll work through this. So we invite you to think about what are you willing to forgive today in you that will help to remove the energy of hostility and fear and violence on planet Earth. And let's get restored to human life. And we define human life, by the way, as imagine holding a newborn. That's all you need to do to define human life. You know exactly what it is. I'd offer that's how you are designed to operate. That's how I am designed to operate. That's our natural state. And what we're looking to do is to restore each of us to that state. So, Ginny, you've got a caller on the line?
No, I don't have anybody on the line, but this is a gentleman who is in Germany, and he's written to us a couple of times. And so he wrote an email, and he said, I've listened to the program. You had answered his question. I'd read his previous questions on the air, and you had answered them. And so I sent him the link to that day. And he says, I listened to the program where Michael answered my questions about responsibility and blame. And as I understand it, there is a core being inside of me that is love itself. And this being is responsive and responsible. And there is a learned self that is accumulated and developed through experiences and is based on automatic reactions. And this self is associated with blame. This is the part of me that constantly focuses on the blame, the past problems, the worries, and the troubles. When we shift the experience and we create a loving space for the trouble, and he's got that in quotes, to express itself instead of running unnoticed, then there is a chance for healing. So he sounds like he's really got it, what we're talking about.
I couldn't have said that better myself.
But then his question is, what I need to learn is how do I live from the core being? How do I do that?
Well, sir, first of all, I acknowledge that you got a hold of the principle. You're right on track. And again, to just simply define, if you ever want to check out what your real being is, go to a local hospital or go to a local orphanage where they're asking for volunteers to come and hold and nurture babies and tap into the essence of who that baby is. That's your core being. That's who you are. And you'll actually never hear me say anything other than how to return to that. If you go back through our archives from day one, you can listen to every show, and every show is about how to acquire the skills and how to catch yourself if you're doing the what we call the non-being stuff, that manufactured self, and return to your essential nature. But the prime tool is forgiveness. And I invite you to go to the website and download that worksheet and start putting the pen to the paper. It will show you how to uncover and remove what never belonged. Now, those who are playing the game of external forgiveness, you know, you made me angry, you made me sad, but I'll forgive you, don't know and can't experience the removal of the things that don't belong in a human form. Forgiveness removes the things that do not belong in a human form and creates a space where you can incarnate in your body as the original being that you are rather than the non-being self that you're not. And so that would be my first suggestion to you, is dig out that worksheet. And, you know, there's a whole series of worksheets there. You might want to go on the site and order some of the DVDs. We've actually got 15 different workshops on DVD, the prime one being Why Is This Happening to Me Again. There's a 4-hour version. There's a 2-hour version, Healing Through Relationships, Codependence to Interdependence, Mind Shifters, and Introduction to Still Point, Breathing Empowered to Heal, Getting the Stretch You Need. There's a whole series of things. You might want to start by working with those DVDs and the tools, seeing as how you're so far away. And we're not likely to get there until if there is a venue there for us to present in. We're actually going to be in Europe in November. We're going to be in Spain. And if there's a big enough interest and group that would like us to come and present in Spain, or pardon me, in Germany, we'd love to come there and present. And so... But in the meantime, the DVDs might be a good substitute to begin to work with the tools on another level. That would be my highest thought for you, sir. And I'm delighted that you're here and delighted that that last show that you listened to made so much sense. You're able to make that opening statement. It's right on track. That's what we're here for. Any thoughts, any response to that, Jean?
Don't have anything else right now. And David and Dr. Tim are both on.
Welcome, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Doing beautifully, thank you.
Very cool. Any suggestions for our friend from Germany?
Well, my quick summary would be that he wants to know how to live from that space of love, and I would offer slightly different words, but the exact same premise that you just said. My words would have been, you'll start living from that as soon as you remove everything that is unlike love from your system. All
yeah.
of the ego's false copies of love, shame, guilt, blame, and the removal of those is our only true work, because the rest of it simply flows. We can't help but be other than what we were created to be, unless we try to be something other. And when we try to be something other, then we muck it all up.
Yes, sir. I'd agree 100%.
So we do,
and
we
work
do
is
like allowance and surrender.
Right. The work of forgiveness.
Well, my feedback for that, Michael. My feedback for that, Michael, is always what you know. The first thing, the response that came to my mind was all of the above, and of course, he isn't familiar with what all of the above is and what to do with it. And what I've always supported and encouraged people to do is to find other people that are doing the work. And if there's a partner that he has or someone that's interested in the work that's local, or that they can do this work on a daily basis, he might want to go start doing building the brain cells and to do things interactively across the internet, talking, you know, through, if he's listening to the radio station, then he could tap into that every day, and to find someone else that's willing to do the work with him and to share back and forth of the success and what it is that they're accomplishing through that. That's the best support that I can offer.
On track, sure.
Yep.
It's time for us to go there. And, you know, there's this wonderful African proverb that says, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And it mm-hmm. takes a whole community of support to move into those new levels of awareness and to move out of the old insanity that is so pervasive in our culture that it seems like it's, you know, it's almost impossible to achieve the direct experience and expression of the actual presence of the human life. There's actually a section in the book that I'm inclined to share. I'd like to read a page or two where, you know, in my book, Why Is This Happening to Me? And by the way, you can go to the website and you can download the book in English or German, Spanish, Swedish. Pardon me, you can't download the book free in Swedish. You can order it, but the publisher wouldn't let us put that on the website free. Thai, Farsi, several different languages. But in the book, you know, my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, is a conversation with this character named Richard, who's this recalcitrant kind of guy who doesn't want to have anything to do with what I'm talking about. He's on his third divorce. He knows all he has to do is get out of town because the problem is all those women in his life. So I get to do a lot of push-pull with Richard, and chapter 18 is entitled Clarifying Love. So I'm going to just share with you the piece that we did on that. So Richard and I went back to our discussion of love. I put forward the thought that one of the keys to the healing process is clarifying the idea of love, which has been ill-defined, misused, and distorted. Cleaning up its definition in our minds is an important piece of foundational work. 2,000 years ago, we were taught love was the most important law to human existence. It must come first if intelligences could be maintained. Teaching love is not religious. It is the most practical thing in the world. One of the major pitfalls we humans have fallen into is that of making any teaching on love sound like religion. Many people throw out teachings based on love or only give them lip service because they think those teachings are religion, which they've been subtly taught to reject. The word religion, Richard, is from the root religare, means to bind tightly. The only true religion had as its purpose that of binding us back to our original nature, love. Love is the soul nature of the Creator. You can only bind love to love through love. The fear and or hostility based mind tries to understand love. It cannot. It cannot even speak in logical terms about love. That does not, however, stop its efforts at maintaining authority. Its pretense and sophistry will run roughshod over anyone who gets in its way. After all, that is its nature. The Creator's nature is love. The hostility and fear-based mind's nature is to control or attack and destroy if it can. Just one second here. My page jumped a little bit. Excuse me, but it just didn't. Okay, there we are. So the Creator's nature is love, and hostility and fear, or fear-based mind's nature is to control, attack, or destroy if it cannot. That is, to attract and destroy if it cannot control. It is simple to determine which mind is expressing, simple to tell, true religion from false. If it attempts to bind to or through fear and or hostility is present, whatever its sophistries, you have a wolf in sheep's clothing. As it punishes, it says, I'm only doing this because I love you. It carries out its inquisitions. It condemns one to hell. It tortures and kills. It says, I'm only doing this to save your soul. I'm only condemning you to protect you. As it makes war, it says, I'm only doing this to create peace. Actual love is totally outside of its conversation. It can only, quote-unquote, think in terms of its own content and so uses fear and hostility to make it look like it's about love. An insane, unreachable, impossible goal. Hostility and fear will never direct people toward love because it cannot. They are tools of darkness. Hostility, the non-being mind, and or the fear-based mind are dissolved in the presence of love. They were meant to be eradicated in the process of the establishment of true religion. All fear and hostility-based dogma is man's attempt to bind others to himself and his loveless mind by keeping their victim's intelligence at bay. No matter how many words are used to cover up the facts, whatever the sophistries, wherever there is hostility and or fear, love is not found. They are mutually exclusive terms, and each person must choose which they will serve. Richard thought that the ideas on love sounded good. He related to love being absent as the presence of hostility and or fear, but wanted to know how to love someone who'd just been abusive to him. He seemed confused and asked in an exasperated tone, who could feel anything but anger or fear in that situation? To love, Richard, you must first straighten out your definition of the word. This may sound trite, but people who can feel love when attacked know what love is and do not have realities called anger or hate in them. But, Richard interjected, stay with me for a minute. Remember, our goal is to let go of the old beliefs and manipulative teachings long enough to build some new brain cells. If when I'm finished, what I've had to say doesn't make sense, throw it out and go back to the old way. In Aramaic, love does not mean cooperate with and help the person who's beating up on you. It does not mean accept every atrocity with a smile and pretend that all is well when it is not. Love does not mean that you don't hold people accountable for their behavior. Love is not a passive state of suppressing your anger so you look like a saint, I reported. Ah, so it's okay to get angry when someone abuses you, Richard said gleefully. I thought so. The reality in your head is giving you information, not delivered by my words, Richard. It's okay to get angry with someone if you want your intelligence to be compromised while you interact with them, I replied. Hostility and or fear, recall, weaken choice and wisdom. We get pretty dumb when those energies are active in us. What's that supposed to mean? Richard almost shouted. It sounds like you're playing games with it. I don't like it. There's an old saying that the truth will set you free, but first it's going to bring up all your anger and rage, I said half-jokingly, in an attempt to lighten the energy a little. Richard, the word love in our culture is so distorted that its true meaning is almost lost. Much of the entertainment industry would have us believe love is sexual athletics and satiation. Others would have us believe it is self-denial and sacrifice. Still others would have us think we show love by receiving their abuses graciously. Think about it. Who has something to gain by our believing in these bizarre definitions of love? I could almost hear Richard's brain churning in search of an answer. I'm not sure what you mean. If I believe that love is sexual athletics as are portrayed on the screen, I suggested, might I pay for more sick movies and demand more intense and bizarre sexuality in order to be satiated? Might I think what is played out in the movies is normal and try to live up to the reality I've come to believe is true? Might I find myself wanting to participate in the outrageous habits for which much of the entertainment industry is famous? We need to recognize, Richard, that fulfilling outrageous fantasies will never satisfy us. It will only lead to even more bizarre behaviors. Until we do, we'll continue to repeat those behaviors, wondering, is that all there is? What's wrong with me? If we hold painful realities in our minds, it does not matter how many of the quote-unquote rewards based on an incorrect understanding of life we receive, happiness will still elude us. No matter how many possessions, how much money, sex, power, or fame we achieve, those things can never satisfy us because they're empty and false. Satiation masquerades as satisfaction. But when it is experienced, it cannot deliver its tempting guarantee. I told Richard the story of the old man on his deathbed who was asked for the secret to happiness. And the old man is said to have replied, "For years and years, I searched for what people told me would make me happy. And then I just decided to serve life and be happy without it." Happiness is a state of mind, a choice we make, not a result of possessing things or being in control of people or circumstances. People often use the sensation that comes from possessing things as a substitute for happiness, for relationship, and as a way of not dealing with their internalized pain. Love is a state of being that produces happiness in a mind. The rest is just sensation. Real relationship is dead in the glamour industry's definition of love. Have you ever felt used as a sexual object and then been thrown away? Anyone who buys into the common media definition of love becomes a sexual object in their own minds and in the minds of others. And, of course, like other objects, they're thrown away after use, I added. I've been on both sides of that scenario, Richard said, sadly, and I don't understand why it has to be that way. I would love to be in a true, honest, and real relationship. Perhaps that's impossible until I straighten out some of my conflicting realities. I think you're right. We tend to live exactly what we've learned. And if we've been used and abused, it takes work to live differently. Relationships are a wondrous place for nurturing, support, and healing if we can remove the confusing and conflicting realities we've hooked into them and return to being. My experience of people who reject or cannot form long-term relationships is that they have so much pain in their quote-unquote relationship file, they have to keep on the move, or they'll have to face what's hidden inside of them. For such a person, an experience of being is not possible because of the painful sensations that are stored in their physiology. And, of course, they will always have somebody else be to blame for that. I've been on the run too long, Richard chimed in. And you're right. I'm the one who's been there every time. I'm starting to get that it's about me. Who promotes this insanity? Why is there so much confusion in the world? And, of course, again, the way to cut through all the mental garbage is to recognize that when you hold a newborn child, you are experiencing human life, what you and I are designed to live out of. The culture gives us all kinds of crazy things, all kinds of insanity. And so those who live in that insanity of hostility and fear have to structure everybody else to live there too. I remember a preacher that I'd been introduced to, and he was talking about love and, you know, all the religious platitudes. And so I went to one of his services, and he had a couple of children. And as he's doing his service, his son came up. He was about 4 years old. And I watched, when I watched the viciousness of his response to his son, who had the audacity to interrupt him. It's like, okay, I got it. We got platitudes here. We don't have the active presence of love. We don't have human life here yet. And what we're looking to do is to support you in being restored to human life, because a man or a woman who can turn to their child in harsh, vicious words and berating the child because the child is living its life, the child doesn't know or care about the goals of the adult. The child just lives its life. And if the parent doesn't have room to allow the child to live its life, and so the child in living its life and not comprehending the adult life interrupts, it steps into all kinds of places. And you can tell a lot about yourself by the response that you would have to a child who does that. And if the response is anything other than, oh, what's happening, sweetheart? There's work to be done. And, you know, it's just we and our humans and doing our work. Jeannie, you've got a question or a thought for us, comment?
There's a person in the chat room that said that they left an abusive relationship 10 months ago and they're still healing, but they're learning a lot about themselves. Do you have some information that you can give to her?
Absolutely. Pick up every tool and start to use it. You know, if we choose, you know, one of the things that that we refer to in our work is what we call the geographic curve. Okay, I'm out of here. I'm in, which really means I'm in too much pain and it's all your fault. Now, if I'm in pain and there's actual abusive behavior happening in the relationship, of course it is wise to remove yourself, at least temporarily and perhaps permanently. But if you take ownership, that doesn't mean that you're to blame for what they did. They're responsible for their behaviors. You know, sometimes people will twist this work and say, well, you know, you created this, so this is all your fault. It's like, no, excuse me. You're responsible for your behavior. I'm responsible for mine. And what I recognize is that I'm responsible for you being in my space doing this behavior. And so I'm going to go in and be responsible for, and responsibility doesn't mean I'm to blame. It doesn't mean I'm guilty. It doesn't mean I'm at fault. It doesn't mean I'm bad. It doesn't mean I'm wrong. All it means is there's a part of my mind cooperating with what happens in my life. And so as I choose to step out of, say, a physically or strongly emotionally abusive relationship, which I have every right to do if that's what's happening, I also have the obligation to myself to continue to do the forgiveness work inside myself to remove the part of me that draws that abusive behavior. And as I remove the part of me that draws that abusive behavior, I won't have to go back and create another relationship to play it out again. People who never learn to be responsible and never learn to forgive get to live the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And by the way, you can go to the website and download the book freely. So continue your work. Cleanse yourself. You know, one of the things they say in the AA programs is if you've been on a drug or alcohol for 10 years, then you give yourself at least 1 month for every year that you were in that state. Now, if you were living in a hostile, fearful relationship, hostility is a drug. If you found yourself being hostile, then you look at the length of time you were there and give yourself at least that time period for healing. And as you work through whatever's going on inside of you, what you'll find is you'll be able to attract, resonate, and create a different quality of relationships in your life. And the quality relationship that is normal for a human being is one that's filled with aliveness, joy, and delight. And when something less than love comes up, communicates responsibly, and heals it instead of blaming the person they're sitting in front of or sitting across from. So if we're living in aliveness, joy, and delight, and experiencing the physiological presence of love, our actual human lives, and you happen to give me the look, and that brings up some fear, let's say, then my forgiveness work would be about going inside myself and taking apart and removing fear. Not blaming you for my fear, but saying, I'll forgive you. That's a Greek idea. Like the Greek translations tell us to forgive each other. The Aramaic translations tell us to go inside ourselves and forgive as to each other. Whole different process, completely different. And of course, if you've never experienced or used the actual tool of forgiveness, you know that these things can't be removed. You know that they're permanent. Excuse me. There is nothing permanent in the universe except the active presence of love. So if there's something less than that in your field, start to use. Put the pen to the paper. It doesn't work to know about this stuff. It works to do this stuff. You have to put your pen to the paper and do the work. And as you do the work, what you'll experience is all kinds of old feelings, griefs, pains, traumas, and thought patterns, behavior patterns, physical distortions and diseases, aches and pains will be removed. They'll begin to disappear. And that's what we're here to support you in doing. That's our job, and we're delighted to be here doing it. Thank you for joining us.
She says that what we're talking about is exactly the work that she's already doing, and she's learning a lot about herself. She said she has had to learn how to set boundaries. That's something that she didn't do before.
Awesome. Well, and oftentimes setting boundaries just means I'm going to stop you from coming to the place in me where I've got something I'm not willing to deal with. What I would invite you to do, if you haven't accessed the Aramaic forgiveness tool yet, would be to go to www.whyagain.com, and on the right-hand side, there's a link, download worksheets. First two things are about, the first two links are about Aramaic forgiveness. I oftentimes hear people say, well, you know, I've already been doing forgiveness work. I'll just share that. Unless you've been working with the work that comes out of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, or Laws of Living, I have never seen anywhere that forgiveness is understood aside from those two venues. Laws of Living, or the precursor course to Laws of Living, was emotional maturity instruction. The rest of the world is working with, at least in my awareness, I'm not saying there isn't anybody else, I just haven't met anybody else. So to see if that's accurate for you, you know, go to the website, it's free, and download it and try it and see what happens. You might find yourself entering into a whole other level of forgiveness and a whole other level of doing that work and learning about yourself. And if not, if it's something you've actually already been doing that you learned somewhere or you intuitively came across, and I've got to correct myself a little bit. I have since seen some people who've intuitively come across this and started to use it. But if there's someone else that's teaching it, actually accurate Aramaic forgiveness, I would like to know about them because I want to study with them. I want to know what they know. I want to know what pieces they don't, that they have, that I may not have. And so that's my whole purpose in doing this work. So please let me know if there is somebody. And otherwise, I just invite you to download that worksheet and start to work with it and see what you find. See what comes out. So Jeannie's got somebody on the line, and it seems like maybe they're having some difficulty communicating. Just one second there. Okay. So any other questions, thoughts in the chat room, or we'll wait till that person calls back in? And Tim, David, any thoughts for our person in the chat room that Jean just read about?
Yeah, Michael, it's David. You know, it was a great reminder that you, when you talked about the 12 steps and what they recommend for people that are in their process at the early parts of it and in as they process through it. And what I had, the thought that I had was, most of us, in the way the dissociated mind wants to, I want it now, immediately. And when it doesn't happen, then it even validates to itself this false sense that, well, this doesn't work either. And as an example of that, I've been doing this work for a number of years, and I've been what I consider on my path, spiritual path, since 1984, when it was when I really made a decision that I would do it differently. And I've made lots of progress, and I have lots of progress to make, to continue to make. And yesterday, I asked Julie to do a breath session with me, as I talked with you about it this morning. And 5 years ago, 6 years ago, or even longer than that now, from my very first breath session to this particular one, it was so different in the respect that I was able to process through a lot of layers of things without even being conscious of it, without needing to have an understanding of it, just to do the exercise. And for me to be able to explain it, and to for other people to be able to get an understanding of it, the truth of it is that everyone has to go through their own. And there is a time frame with it, as you pointed out, that if a person's been in a relationship or has been in abuse with some type of drug for 10 years, then you can pretty well figure that from month to month of how much it is, how much work that you've got to do. I remember there was a fellow that was in AA that they always recommend people to get sponsors, as we invite people to get support of other people. He would only take someone on, and he would teach them. He would take 1 year for each 12 steps. So a person knew that if they enrolled, if they asked him to be a sponsor, how long that it was going to be required. Now, he took them through the 12 steps. It's just that he knew that there was a commitment for him to teach it to folks, that it was a year for each one. So not everyone has to take that much time, and there is a time frame that's involved based on the level of willingness, the commitment level, and their consistency to do the work. So,
for sure. One of the sayings I hear from you often, David, is that, and I understand it's an AA saying or an anonymous saying, and that is that everybody wants a softer, gentler way, and, you know, and everybody wants it instantly, and everybody wants it yesterday, and nobody wants to put the pen to the paper and face what's in them. And the reason for that, and it's very understandable, until you build the brain cells for it's possible, it seems to our counselor, our non-being mind, that it can't be done. And the reason for that is, and if you go back to the ancient Aramaic, which is a language about genetics, one of the things that Aramaic is about genetics, not theology, genetics. So when they said in the ancient Aramaic, the sins of the fathers are passed into 3 and 4 generations. First of all, that word sin has nothing to do with the Greek interpretation. It has nothing to do with your identity or any identity you should ever claim. You're going down the tubes if you claim the identity of the sinner. It may be something that you've done, but the word actually means, the word for sin in Aramaic is an archery term. And when you fired at the target and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin. It simply means off the mark. So if you engage in an energy that's off the mark, then you store that frequency in your structure. You defile your temple. That's why they said the wages of sin is death. The result of putting energies in that are off the mark is you destroy yourself. It's got nothing to do with some punisher out there, and it's got nothing to do with your identity. In the Aramaic, genetic aspect of the language, when they said the sins of the fathers will be passed into 3 and 4 generations, what they were saying was that every energy that's off the mark is stored holographically in every cell of your structure, including the sperm and the egg. And so were you to conceive a child tomorrow, that child would have in its structure every thought you've ever thought, every feeling you've ever felt, every reality you've ever engaged in. And that's passed for at least four generations. If it's not reinforced, then it tends to become muted in the genetics. However, it still resides there. And so when you think back, where did the fourth generation back get their thoughts, their feelings, their realities? And the generation before that and the four before that, we've literally got our whole bloodline in there. And the work is that of developing the skill to become acquainted with everything that's in your genetics, to be able to decode what's been hidden there in your own life and in the life of your ancestors. This is no small task. This is no task for wimps. This is a process that you consciously engage in because you realize what there is to be done. So to the average state of awareness, it's impossible for people to decode their own genetics. Not because it's impossible, but because we've never been taught the skill. We've never been invited to. We've never been informed that we can do that. But here's what happens. If you can't decode your own genetics, out of your genetics, you'll send out a field that will draw somebody who has the decoder, somebody who knows precisely and exactly how to play it out for you. And when they do, they will resonate what's in your genetics. What's in your genetics that's been denied and dissociated will, and or what's in the store of your own brain cell structure will come up and create a picture of them, and you'll be sure that what's going on inside of you is about them. That's why we have this test for determining whether something you're feeling is yours or not. Are you feeling it? If you're feeling it, you know it's yours, even though your brain, which lies to you, tells you it's about everybody else. Until you know how to collapse that projection out of the genetics, you'll keep attracting person after person after person after person who has the decoder and plays it out with you. Once you first start to suspect, oh, I'm feeling this, yes, my 9-bit mind, my brain is showing me it's all about everybody else, but the truth is I'm feeling it, so this must be mine. I wonder how I go in and collapse it. Once I start to suspect that and do that, then I collapse all of these things that come from the generations. And then I'm freed from the generations. You might remember a story about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. This was not a story about theology. This was not a story about religion. This was not a story about whether you're Jewish or you're Christian or you're Muslim or anything else. This is our human story. It was a symbol for how the average person spends 40 years in their own unconscious condition, thinking that the problem is outside of them. That's the code word for the desert. Now, you remember this journey for this group of people should have taken about 2 weeks, and it took 40 years. What had to happen in order to get out of the desert? They said the old generation had to die off. That didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari, which means cause. All of the old causes held in your genetic structure and your memory bank that are unlike what would support you embodying love have to be removed for you to live a life that's actually based in love, for you to claim an actual human life. And people say, oh, that just sounds like so much work, Michael. That sounds so hard. It's like, no, actually, living out of genetic and environmental insanity, that's really hard. Yes, but living out of that insanity, because it's been going on for so many generations, is effortless. Pardon me. It takes effort. Excuse me. Took a sip of water and went down the wrong way. Excuse me. So it's effortless to live out of your genetic insanity. And we define insanity as a human form behaving without the active presence of love. And so as you acquire the tools and acquire the skills, you start to get rid of the old generations. those causes related to all forms of hostility and fear. And when you get rid of those old causes, you come out of the desert into the promised land. What's the promised land? Hold a newborn child. You know what the promised land is. You are the active presence of love. You feel in your physiology, in every cell of your structure, the active presence of love. You get to consciously create whatever happens in your life rather than unconsciously creating out of whatever stored in your generational database. The old generations have to go. The old causes have to be removed. There's only one way to do that, and that's forgiveness. And it's not about letting other people off the hook. It's about collapsing the projections of the dissociated mind, going inside of yourself and changing the causes that are held within you from those generations. And Jeannie tells me that we have a caller on the line. Awesome.
And it's actually Lady Jane.
Oh, young lady, how are you?
Fine, thank you. It's good to, you know, I was tracking with you and I noticed, you know, I'm going with you on this subject and then the shifts and I'm on this subject and then that subject. And, you know, when you're focused, it's you covered an awful lot of territory today, well, every day, really. And I enjoy it as long as I focus, which is important when you're tracking with you. Okay?
Yeah, and when something comes up that's out of alignment with it, there's the process, and it'll tend to get lost. You know, interestingly, in the Aramaic, if a preacher was presenting in the Aramaic culture and somebody went to sleep in front of them, that was a compliment. It's like,
oh?
You were giving me so much truth, I went unconscious. You blew me out.
Okay. I'll remember that.
That's a compliment.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Oh, two things. One
Why?
Is in AA.
Okay.
It's like every year is, you know, like when you start out your first year, and you
right.
build, and so I'm now 32 years old in the AA movement.
Awesome.
Yes,
yeah.
It's great. And I feel like that a lot of times, you know, that age group. But
Very
that was
cool.
one thing I was going to say. But the other thing was, it's completely off what you were talking about. You might have talked about it yesterday, I was gone, but about the movie that you sent out for
right.
everybody
yeah,
to watch.
Yeah, we did talk about it, actually. Yeah, we did a whole show on it, or most of a show on it, the day before yesterday on Brzezinski.
I'm
yes.
going to go to PS.
Very powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm in there late, but it's a P.S. Quite a few people around here I sent it to did listen and did get a lot from it, so it wasn't in vain, and I listened to all of it. And, well, it's, you know, there's so much going on in the world like that. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, in everything.
Yes.
So, but
yeah.
did you know that there had been, and I think you probably do know this, a book 20 years ago or so called The Cancer Cure, and it was about a
right.
doctor. Huh? It was about a doctor that developed a machine, a vibration machine, and it was working to cure cancer, and they shut him
right.
down, and then anybody who bought the machine, they took their license away from them if they used them. So that was going
yeah.
on, you know. Anytime there's a cure coming up, you know, they'll do anything to stop it.
Yes.
That's incredible, isn't
it's
it?
It's true.
When we think about how...
It is amazing, but that's just how the non-being mind goes. It wants to control, and if it can't control, then it's going to do... You know, you think about this fellow who's got his laboratory, and he's a gentle soul.
He was.
Healing
is.
People. There was no question that people are healing with his process.
That's
and
right.
so what does the non-being mind do? It gets its SWAT team with its flak jackets and its automatic machine guns and comes in to take his treatment away from him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's so bizarre and so insane. And by the way, thank you for bringing that movie up, because if you go, they extended the ability to listen to it free. It's BrzezinskiMovie.com, and I don't know the spelling. Maybe Jeannie can catch it while we're talking. But BrzezinskiMovie.com, and you can watch it free. You can also order, I just ordered 30 copies of it. You know, it sells for $20 retail, but you can order copies from the website until, I believe it's the 20th of June as well, for $5 a piece if you buy them by the 20. So you, for $100, you can buy 20 copies. And it is an awesome investment to make to spread it around. We actually have one friend who's buying 10,000 of them.
How many?
He's trying to put them out there. 10,000 copies.
My land.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's time for us to get how the non-being mind works. And this film is an awesome demonstration of exactly, you know, what it does.
Okay. Now I'm going to shift again on the schedule. Jean has come back from Florida, and I was with her yesterday, and she said, look up the schedule and let me know. So I'm looking at the schedule, and on the 9-day intuitive development of still point breathing, is that all you do in that course is still point breathe, or do you know?
Well, there are it's an experiential workshop that is about developing the intuitive faculty, the spiritual intuitive faculty, and that is to gather information from the world energetically, directly, without going through the intellectual faculty. So that's,
oh, that's
the,
great.
That particular workshop. Right now, whether that workshop's going to happen or not is kind of a question mark because we don't have anybody registered for it. You know, it's in 22 years of operating Heartland, the last 3 years with the way the economy is, have been our smallest seasons ever. And so I don't know whether that one's going to be a go, but that's what that is. It's a practicum, and part of the practicum is still point breathing.
Okay. Another thing I noticed on here, I always like the one I'm on codependency, and I didn't see anything on there.
Well, again, that was actually going to be our first one that started on July the 8th, and because as we got close to the dates, you know, as we moved into the last couple of weeks,
okay.
We didn't have people registered for that one, so we nixed that one from the schedule. So we're going to do a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again, a 9-day teacher training, and 16-day Laws of Living. Now, if we gather a group that wants to do the intuitive development or wants to do the Course in Miracles, I'm absolutely delighted to do it. But right now,
I'm sure you are.
People are living in such trauma around money. They're just, and travel. It seems like there's a difficulty in people traveling right now, and so those two are kind of up in the air.
Okay. Well, I wondered. I hadn't talked to you about it, and we'll see what Jean says. I don't. I'll give her that information. Okay.
Yeah, our last conversation was she was interested in the laws of living, and I think that's when she'd be ready to do it. It approaches the teaching from a totally different direction than any of the other intensives. There's actually
now that's what you've told
text
her.
Involved
yeah.
And go through the text process. So.
Yeah. Okay, Michael, I appreciate everything
cool.
You're doing. And I'll be listening.
Awesome.
Au revoir.
We appreciate you and love you.
Thank
okay.
you.
We'd be loving your presence.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Jean.
Seven and a half minutes, but someone in the chat room had asked me if I could find when we discuss the upper and lower path. And a lot of times, just like today, we cover so many topics that in my little synopsis of what the day is about, I don't cover everything, and I've gone back through and can't find it. So if you could address this question for them, perhaps I'll still try to find the day that we talked about it before, but they want to know if you could elaborate on the upper path sex. That was actually when we talked about the upper path and lower path. And so if you can elaborate
okay.
just on that one point,
sure.
and I'll still try
sure.
to find where we talked yeah. about it.
Okay, cool. Well, in the there's a DVD that we have, or a workshop that we do. We're actually doing that workshop tonight here in Oregon. And so Medford Unity will be doing tonight. If you're anywhere in this territory, come on and play. But the circle of life and how to play it looks at what we call the upper and the lower path. What oftentimes when people are doing lower path behaviors, you know, that preacher that I spoke about earlier who just puked all over his 4-year-old son when he came up to you know, and wanted something from his father during his sermon about love and about God, which is kind of interesting, that would be a lower path behavior. But of course, if you talked to the man, he would say, well, but I only did it because I was in my sermon and I'm serving people and I'm serving God and old story about how this is justified. But you know, clearly and obviously turning in hostility to a 4-year-old in the middle of a sermon about love is really pretty off base and pretty much lower path. So we look at what the lower path mind does, and then we look at what the upper path mind does. We look at that as an alternative. So there's one point at which we talk about the lower path cheap copy of intimacy. And the cheap copy of intimacy is sex, You know, if I hop into bed, then I'm intimate with you. And what happens is, because there is no intimacy in that, that becomes, sex becomes for many people a block to intimacy if they're just, you know, jump into bed. And so I kind of tongue-in-cheek, you know, jokingly offer the thought as I speak about the lower path that the non-being mind's copy of intimacy is sex, then the upper path alternative is into me see. It's a space where I'm safe to expose myself, I'm safe to express who I am, and I'm safe to experience my partner as who they are. So that's into me see. We have real intimacy then. And then I kind of jokingly say, and on the upper path, there's no sex. Sort of to chuck people's minds. And then I explain that the act of physical intimacy, what the lower path calls sex, becomes what it's truly designed to be. It becomes an expression of being. It becomes an expression of connectedness. It becomes a space in which to connect with creative energy directly. And so it becomes the act of literally bringing love, the energy of being and love into the world, if it truly comes from that space of being. So that was my that would be my explanation of the comment that was made in that show a few weeks ago. Is that satisfying the question in the chat room?
He hasn't responded yet, but I also found in our question and answers on our website, which is www.whyagain.com, we have a section that's frequently asked questions. And actually, one of the questions is titled Upper Path 6. And so I put that link out there so anyone else can also, if you're not in the chat room, can go out to the frequently asked questions and click on that and read a response. And those the answers under the frequently asked questions is from Michael and I. And they are true questions that have come in to us at different times. And back on the Brzezinski movie, the website for that, I've put it in the chat room, but it's www. And it's spelled B as in boy, URZYNSKIMOVIE, BrzezinskiMovie.com.
You can watch it free until the 20th. You can also go to Amazon, and for $2.99, you can watch it streaming, so it's not a big deal. I think Amazon's selling it for something like $13.99, but you can buy them directly from the producer of the film for $20 for $100. And we really need to, I think, for two reasons. One, to expose the insanity that's going on in officialdom and what happens to those things that really work and threaten the power structure. That's one reason to do it. But there's a more important reason to me to watch that film. And that is that it's a very powerful demonstration of the principles by which the non-being mind operates. Obviously, the FDA is there to support people, you would think, in healing. But what it's become is the protector of an industry that is about mega dollars. And, you know, at one point, the FDA sent agents out to Dr. Brzezinski's patients to see if they could get these people. I mean, these agents are flying all over the country. If they could get people to complain about him, and none of his patients would complain. So they specifically, when they charged him and tried to put him in prison, they specifically said, and we're not going to raise the issue about whether or not the treatment worked. So here's a guy who's disappearing brain cancers in little kids in a month, kids who've been through chemo and radiation. He's disappearing brain cancers, but we're not going to talk about that. That's got nothing to do with it. And that's just the insanity of the non-being mind. So it shows how the non-being mind works, and it gives us a clue as to how our own non-being mind works. And as you see that, you know, you observe it, you go, oh, my goodness, look at it. That's what I do. That's something I can heal. And we're here to support you in healing and creating the best year yet of your eternal life. Thanks for being with us. Bring us with you the show tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness.
Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.yagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.